Success stories and interviews with game changers and thought leaders who have overcome both in life and in business. Welcome to Vertical Momentum.
Guys, welcome back to another episode of Vertical Momentum. I am your host, Richard Kaufman, also known as The Comeback Coach. Guys, this is going to be an amazing episode. You want to be a leader? We're going to talk to you about being a leader, and you don't have to be out front, loud. You don't have to be that. You can be the modest leader, and you get more results, because like they say, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. So guys, listen to this episode, share it. This is going to be amazing. I want to introduce our brother, Ralph, coming on. He's got a brand new book out. It's called The Modest Leader. Amazing, game-changing book. Changed my life, changed my thought process. Ralph, my brother, what's going on?
I'm good, Richard. How are you?
Oh, man. You know what? Life is so good. I loved your book. I devoured it in one sitting. It's so easy to read. It's very easily digestible, even for a low-tech redneck like myself. So, thank you so much for that book, brother. How are you doing? What's new?
I'm good. Nothing new. Just doing more podcasts. It's crazy what that book did for me. Actually, I had podcasters starting to reach out to me, do interviews with them. So, yeah, things have been going pretty steady.
You're doing big things. You got a lot of stuff going on. But now, first of all, we're going to take you back. We're going to take you back to when you were a young little boy. What were you like as a little boy, and how was your family dynamic?
So I grew up a single parent home. My father died of pretty much alcoholism. He had liver issues when I was 9 years old, and he passed away. I turned to my mom right then and there at his viewing and said, "Mom, I'm not going to drink, not going to smoke, not going to do any drugs." At 9 years old, haven't since then. we moved all over the places to where we needed to, where we could afford, because my mom had to do work two jobs. And Hawaii's not cheap. And every time they raised the rent, we always had to move. And some of these areas weren't the greatest, but, my mom made it work somehow, some way. So I'm very thankful for her.
Now, did you have any brothers and sisters coming up?
No, that's the crazy thing. I'm the only child.
So now, because I grew up without a father. And so I never really knew how to grow up to be a good husband and a good father until I became a husband and father. As a child, because my mother was an addict, I used to escape. And my means of escape was reading. Did you have any means of escape that you enjoyed to do when you were a kid?
Yeah, I would go down the park, play basketball with my friends. I played instruments when I was young. I played the violin and then played the saxophone after that. So, that was kind of my escape through everything. Just to get away from the realness of life, I guess, as a kid. Because I did have to grow up pretty fast. So
now, what kind of kid were you in school? Were you a good student? Were you an athlete?
No, actually. I was an average student. I was like a C-B student, But I did my best just to try and keep up with everybody. But, being a single-parent home where my mom had to work two jobs and I was home by myself, I just had to find ways to keep myself out of trouble.
Now, when you graduated high school, did you get any scholarships to go to colleges or anything like that?
No, I didn't. I was more, my grades weren't good enough to go to any kind of universities. So what happened was I went to a community college, didn't really find my footing there. And then I saw that there was a trade school for electronics, and that's when the dot-com boom was going. Everybody's going into the computer side of things and, internet side of things. And I saw a trade school for it was electronics / computer. programming. So I went into that program for 2 years and got my associate's degree from there. Graduated cum laude from that, amazingly.
So, you know, what made you decide to join the military? What was your thought process?
So joining the military, I after I got my degree, the only job I could get in Hawaii was Office Max. I was an electronic associate. And I'm like, man, this is not for me. And inside, I always wanted to serve. I always wanted to serve something bigger than myself. I'll be part of something with a purpose. And 11 months after I got that job, I walked into an Air Force recruiter office and said, hey, what can you guys offer me? I have an electronics background. And they said, well, if you're interested, we do have a lot of technical type of jobs in the Air Force. And right after that, I think it was an hour and a half one-on-one with the recruiter, and I walked out of there, signed up. So I just had to wait for a job to pick, MEPS, and a ship date.
Now, did you go in as an officer because you had a bachelor's degree, or did you go in as enlisted?
No, so I only had an associate's degree. Okay. So I went in enlisted. I did get E2 out of that, but
E2 junior graduate, they're kind of
all similar anyway, until you make sergeant, you know?
So what was it like leaving home and, you know, leaving your mom, because you and her were very close. And, you know, what was it like going to, you know, basic training and leaving the house for the first time?
Yeah, so that was pretty interesting, because I didn't tell my mom until 2 weeks before I had to ship out that I was going into the military, because I know she didn't want me to leave. But for me, I had to cut the cord, because after I got my associate's degree with this trade school, I had an interview with the CIA, and they wanted a second interview. The problem with that was I wasn't available because I had to work. But they still sent me the documents to go apply for the CIA as a telecommunications officer. And at that moment, I said, you know what? Maybe it is time for me to leave this rock, Hawaii, because, you know, opportunities here for me aren't great. And I want to kind of expand my horizons a bit. And that's why I chose to go into the Air Force.
Now, one thing I really love about you is you're very humble. And I mean that in a good way. And you're always about us, we. It's never about, you know, you or me. So, but that all goes back to when you were in the fifth grade and something happened. So can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So in the fifth grade, I was voted, what do you call that? Best friend of the class. You know, every kid voted who would be your best friend in this class. And they voted me. And I was shocked. I was like, huh? And I realized that when you take the me or I and you just care about people, even at that age, even with the situation I've been through, you know, I never used it as a crutch. Because I always know that my mom taught me to be very strong in your beliefs, and whatever you do, you know, you do it to the best of your ability. And when you take out the me, the I, the reciprocation is crazy. So one time I had these bags, right? I'm not a very big guy. I was probably like 4 foot nothing back then, with three bags to go on a camping trip, and I had to take that on the city bus. And then when I walked out, my friends saw me and they all ran and they helped carry my bags to, you know, pull me out. I didn't even ask. They just saw me. So, yeah, at that point, I was like, you know what? Compassion is more important than anybody's title or whatever material things they have. It's your character that matters the most compared to the physical things in life.
And, you know, one thing I really relate to your story, because I was involved in the Big Brother, Big Sister program. And that really changed my perspective on you know, how some people even, you know, even though I had it bad, some people even had it worse than me. So can you please talk a little bit about, you know, being involved with the Big Brothers and Big Sisters when you were a child?
Yeah, my mom, I had a friend who also had a single child, a son, and he was growing up fatherless too. And she mentioned something about the Big Brothers, Big Sister program. So my mom asked me, do you want to go through that program? And I said, yeah, absolutely. And that's where I met my one of the mentors. I'm still in touch with him today. He taught me that, you know, it's not, I lived in, it's a place called Kalihi. You know, it's not the greatest area to grow up, but it's not the worst neither. But he told me, you know, this is not the only place in this world. Look past of what you physically see. Find out what really is out there for you, because there's so much opportunities out there for you. And he was teaching me this since I was in the fifth grade. And so I stopped seeing him, you know, in the Big Brother, Big Sister. When you're 18, you kind of, that contract's over, right, at 18 years old. But we still hung out after 18. And every time I go back to Hawaii, I try to make a point to go see him. But he taught me how to expand my horizons, how to think bigger, and just not limit myself.
Now, you know, when we join the military, you know, a lot of times people, if a person's quiet or if they're not big stature, they get looked over a lot. So what was it like, you know, not being of a big stature and also being a kind of quiet guy? What was your first couple of years in the military like?
It was pretty interesting because I was still adjusting to that culture, coming from Hawaii, the Aloha spirit. Everybody's, you know, pretty receptive to each other. Then I go into the military, I meet people from all different places. Then I have to adjust to each person's attitude. But they always, I wouldn't say weak, but they wouldn't say that after they met me. You know what I mean? They would judge me on the outside, but once they got to know me, they're like, oh, this guy's actually, you know, all right. Like, I'm not going to be a pushover. So people had to get to know me to really know what I was about. And I didn't really go out there just showing myself like that.
So how quickly did you become a non-commissioned officer?
3.5 years.
Okay, because I know that when I became a non-commissioned officer in the military, they call it the NCO creed. I don't know about the other, in the Army, it's NCO creed. But I took being an NCO very seriously. I always took care of my guys, make sure they were taken care of. So talk about the mindset going from an enlisted, now all of a sudden you're an NCO. And what is the difference between a good leader and an influential leader?
Ooh, that's a tough one. So with the difference, it's, you know, not now you're charged, right? As an NCO, I think I'm pretty sure it's the same with other branches. You're charged with the responsibility of making decisions, guys. And of course, you have to take that seriously. You have to be strong and firm in your decision, whether it's wrong or right, and face the consequences when it's wrong. For me, it was just adjusting from being like hanging out with the guys I was hanging out with, and then all of a sudden I got charged with this rank. Now our relationship, our working relationship is different, because I had to let them know, hey, I'm a sergeant here, and you're my subordinate now, but I'm still not gonna treat it as a, you know, I'm not gonna be power tripping over anything. I'm still gonna treat them with compassion, make sure I take care of them, and, you know, try to let them shine in their way. Now that I had the power to do that.
And you know, like one, like when I became an NCO, I was a tanker. You know, that was my job. I was an M1 tanker. And just because I was an NCO didn't mean that when our tank broke down and we had to go break track, that I'm just going to sit in a chair and watch them work while I sat there. So I tried to really, you know, lead by example. Is that something that you did?
Oh, absolutely. I told my guys, I would never ask them to do something that I wouldn't do. And if they didn't know how to do it, I'd go in there, get dirty with them. Cause we used to work on aircraft. I used to work on the A-10s and the F-15s, and we were weapons loaders. So every time, you know, a new troop would come in, I'd show them, hey, this is how you do it. You know, make sure everything's according to the checklist. And if you have any questions, and I tell them, please do not be afraid to say you don't know, because I'm not going to hound you. I'm going to appreciate your honesty, and we're going to get together. You know?
Yep. Now, one thing, you know, I always, even when, you know, I had my own squad, my own platoon, if I made a mistake, I would own up to it in front of the troops. You know, I always tried to, you know, have like Steven and Lane talk about, you know, that honesty, integrity, and the transparency. And I think a lot of times leaders are afraid to say, hey, you know what, guys? I screwed up. I made a mistake. You know what I mean? So how were you, if anything like that happened to you, where you're like, all right, guys, you know what? I screwed up. I'm sorry. Let's move on. I think they respect you more for that. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, of course. I would tell them, you know, my bad. I made this mistake. It's my fault. You know, do not take any blame for this. And even if it was, you know, the troops' fault, I'd be like, no, I'm not going to let crap roll downhill. I'm going to stop it from me. I'm going to take the butt chewing, and we just going to roll forward from here. We're going to take what we need, you know, what they give us, and then we're going to improve from it.
Now, obviously, you know, that built trust in between your people and the squad. So, you know, and I think the biggest thing, no matter if it's business, whether it's personal relationships, whether it's in the military, is having trust in your fire team is probably the biggest thing. Because I know if we go into war, I know that Ralph's got my back. I can trust him that he's squared away, his weapon's clean. You know what I mean? And if you don't have that trust, it's kind of like, well, then you really don't have a team. You know what I mean? You just have one guy telling other people what to do.
Yeah, I always told my crew, if we had issues, let's go far away from the squadron and let's talk about it. If we got to scream at each other, we got to scream at each other. But let's come out of it better than before.
So now, you know, like I love, there's some people that I love, you know, I didn't like the guys that were very loud, boisterous, and I still don't like even some public speakers that are just loud. And you know, I like the guy that's quiet, sometimes unassuming, and sometimes I got to lean in to hear what they're talking about. So talk to us about the difference between you know being a person that, you know, leads by example and talks quietly but carries a big stick, and somebody that just talks out loud just to talk out loud and bark orders.
Yeah, so I never really liked those guys neither. But to me, it was yelling, being loud. That was just a waste of energy to me. I even told my troops, you know, I'm not loud. I observe how you guys are. And if we got to fix something, this will be the tone of my voice. If you got to fix it this way and, you know, help. And I'll be right there with you, right alongside. But no, I was never loud, and I have a baby face too. So that, you know, at 21, a lot of people told me I looked like I was a 16-year-old, and I was a staff sergeant. And so that made it even harder for some of the new E6s that came in to kind of look at me and be like, "Can we trust this guy?" So I always had to prove myself over and over again. But at the same time, I had to prove to my troops, like, hey, I got your back.
So, you know, because I know once I got my head straight the second time I was in, and I started moving up the ranks, I started getting a lot of haters. You know, I started getting people, oh, he thinks he's better than me now that he's moving up. So what was it that made you move up more than others? Did you put in more study time? Did you put more work in? What made you, because like a lot of people, you know, they would get to E5 and E6 and then they get fat, dumb, and happy. What was it that, you know, what was it that made you decide, all right, I want to take this even further?
So there was a shift in my military career. It was, there was a senior master sergeant. I don't know what she had against me, but she was trying to kick me out for everything that was wrong on the flight line, but none of it had my name on it. And I just didn't know why. Even the other staff sergeants were like, why is she like this to you? And so what happened was, because this is my assumption, I don't know if it's fact or not, but I found out later on, because she couldn't find anything to build paperwork on me to kick me out of the Air Force, she stopped my reenlistment paperwork from going through. So when I tried to, at my 5-year mark, they told me I'm downsizing the whole military force, and you needed to turn in a certain piece of paper to make sure you can reenlist. And that paper never got through.
That's an MPF, a military personnel flight. I was upset, right?
And I'm like, what do I do now? I didn't even prepare myself to be a civilian. So part of the out processing, you have to go through a reserve recruiter. And what's crazy is that reserve recruiter knew my story, went to Hawaii where I was ETSing out of. You know, I was going back to my hometown. And he had a conference with other recruiters out there. And they said, hey, there's a 2W that just got out, still wants to serve. And this unit was looking for a 2W, which was my career field. And it was a perfect marriage. And at that point, I said, you know what? I'm going to make this, even though it's the reserves, I'm going to make this the best military career possible. And you know what they say, right? The best revenge is success.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of what happened to me. Like, I didn't have a choice but to get out of the active duty part. And then through that, I got multiple lead positions with my civilian career, and I worked with a lot of veterans, and still then I still had to fight to get those lead positions because they looked at resumes. I guess mine wasn't good enough, and this other guy never had the same experience I did, but he was the lead. But Army veteran, he came up to me and said, I know you're upset with your rank, your pay here in this company, but he told me this. He said, if you can prove to me you can lead these guys, then I'll take care of you. So 6 months later, I got about a $14 raise because he made me a tech 3 and he made me a lead, which, you know, those two things will give you extra pay.
Okay. So now you're doing both. You're doing civilian work and you're also in the military at the same time. You know, and a lot of people don't realize how hard that is on a person's life and a person's, a person's personal life, because right. You're not really military, but you're not really civilian. So you're kind of like riding a line, and usually, like, you know, we all know, you know, what happens with Master Sergeant Robert Garcia, you know, that anytime there's a wedding, anything like that, you're pretty much going to have a drill that weekend. When you're not, anything good that happens, is you're usually going to have a drill that weekend. So how did you go about trying to excel both in the civilian sector and also the military sector?
What happened to me on active duty, that's what drove me. I said, you know what? I'm going to take control of what I can and prove to these guys around me that I will take care of them, and from top to bottom, that, you know, I'm not going to be afraid to stand up for the guys, but at the same time, I'm going to produce for the higher ups. The balance was hard because, you know, you hear some companies, yeah, we support the veterans, this and that. Every time, I remember some companies say, hey, I got to be gone for 3 months. I got to be gone for 4 months, 2 weeks, right? And they're like, what, again? I said, I thought you guys supported the veterans. So you always had that conflict. And then on top of your work and your military life, you have your family. Now you got to balance that out too, because now you got to adjust to either your spouse has to adjust to a certain type of schedule, or you got to bring a family member in to help take care of your kids, or just stuff like that. You know, they don't realize, like, on active duty, there's two things you take care of: your military career and your family. When you become a reservist, there's three things: your military career, your civilian job, and your family.
And family usually ends up being last a lot of times.
Yeah, which it shouldn't be, but yeah, because you got to provide missions and you got to provide for the family. So
now what do you do if, you know, because like we can talk about it both ways. We're going to talk about business and we're also going to talk about military. What do you do if you have a team member that is underperforming? What, you know, because in my experience, if you yell at a person, and, you know, I try not to curse on my show, but it's my show, so I can. You know, if you call a person a shitbag, they're just going to become a bigger shitbag. So yeah. Take a person, like, I mean, for me, the second time I got in, I was that shitbag until I got my head straight. But it was somebody that took me underneath their wing and taught me. So how did you, if you had anybody like that in your charge, how did you help turn them around?
So one situation is where I had a weapons crew. I see, oh my God, all these other sergeants just yelling, and he would move slower and slower and slower. It was an opposite effect. And then once he became under my supervision, I said, look, I see how the other sergeants are treating you. This is my tone of my voice. This is how loud I'm going to get with you, no matter what. You work hard for me, I'll take care of you. Became one of the best weapons troop on the flat line after that. So it was just how he didn't respond well to all the yelling, but he responded more to somebody caring about him. Because I know one time he got in trouble. He parked somewhere where he wasn't supposed to, so they wanted me to write him a letter of counseling. And so, I said, man, that's crap, right? So we went to the private office, wrote him the letter of counseling, and I said, is this ever going to happen again? He said, no, Sergeant. So I ripped it up. I said, this is not going in your personal file. I don't care what they say. So just having the backbone and just, you know, letting them know, hey, I'm willing to take this for you as long as you work hard for me and you take care of me.
And, you know, I love that because, you know, I got out of the military now. It's been 12 years. And that was the one thing that I hated. I mean, I went through basic in 1986. So I'm like one of those OGs. I'm one of the old guard, you know. Yeah. If me and you had a problem with each other, we would take off our blouse, hop behind a tank, duke it out a little bit, come back, put our tops back on, have a beer and just, you know, talk about it. But, you know, and then everything started becoming, you know, counseling statements, which I don't think counseling statements does shit for anybody unless you're just trying to get somebody kicked out. So talk to us about, because there's a difference between, you know, listening and active listening. You know, and there's a difference between, you know, talking with someone and talking at someone. So talk to us about effective communication.
So what I do is I try to find out their interest, right? Like my crew, I had one guy, you know, he was black.
all hip hop. And then I had the Caucasian guy. He was goth. And I had to mesh them together to make us work together. So what I do, I had to find out their interests, find out, you know, where their dorms are, not to spy on them, just to check out, make sure they're doing okay, observe their behavior, and just talk to them in a manner where it's from the heart. Because a lot of times in the military, it's so structured, and out of the structured way are more successful than the people who are in the structured way. That's what my observation anyway. So I talk to them in a manner where they can respond in kind, and where I can tell them what my interests are too, so that we all have some kind of bond.
You know, and I really appreciate that. And, you know, something that like helped turn me around, there was a sergeant, his name was Sergeant First Class Villa. I don't know if he's still alive anymore, but what he would do was, you know, even though he knew I screwed up, he would celebrate the little wins for me. You know, like if I passed inspection, something stupid like that, but he would praise me. And it made me want to do better and go above and beyond, you know, because he would celebrate those little wins. So can you please talk about that a little bit? You know, sometimes in order to, the way to get a person to do better things is to praise them when they do good things, and they'll want to do them even more, you know?
Yeah, it magnifies it for that person, right? Like when we used to fail our monthly equivalency for loading weapons on the aircraft, and then I said, you know what, I need to improve on this. And then I had that same troop that, you know, people were having trouble with. And I took the other guy. The other guy, he was good. He knew his job. He knew everything. He actually stood up to me and said, we need to step up. I'm like, you're absolutely right. So we talked about it. Said, all right, let's work on this. Let's work on this. And with this person that was, you know, that little wins thing, I say, hey, let's move faster, let's move faster, let's move faster. And he, in his head, he think he was moving faster, but every time I say, let's move faster, he would go quicker and quicker and quicker. And then towards, like, after some time, we started winning crew of the month. We started getting zero discrepancies on our loads. Sometimes we were the fastest ones to load the aircraft. And what was the reward of that? We could go straight home after that. Shift on a flight line. So what I would do is, like, if we had that, I would take them out to it was called Coco's. It's one of the Japanese that everybody loved in Japan.
Okay.
So we would go out there and treat them. Hey, after this load, let's clean up. Let's go get some dinner and go home. So all those little things, and then I would tell them, hey, you're doing good, man. Just keep it up. You know, just little tidbits like that. It's amazing the response that you get from these certain type of individuals. And then, of course, you got to study the type of individuals they are too, right? Some don't react too greatly to that. Sometimes it's more of, let me talk to you on the side, away from everybody, you know? And then I can have a serious tone, but still not yell at them. But they would appreciate it because I took them to the side and not, what do you call that? Not embarrass them in front of their peers.
Okay. Now, how many years did you do in the military?
I did a total of 20.
So now, what was your thought process? You hit your 20-year mark. What was your thought process in getting out? Now, the reason why I asked that, because I've interviewed now hundreds of veterans, and usually when they get out of the military, no matter if they serve 2 years or 20, you know, they kind of lose their mission. Like our friend Nick from the group talks about, you know, once you step off the base, the military does not give a shit about you, and your phone stops ringing. So now you don't have a mission. A lot of times, if you only did a couple years, you don't have a paycheck, and now you don't have your squad members and your friends. So what was your mindset and what was your transitioning out like?
So there was two transitioning for me since I went from active duty and then transitioned out of the reserves. So the active duty, I wasn't ready. I had a hard time. I had to, but it was because I woke up without a purpose no more. You know, it was something that was missing. I didn't have the troops I used to have. It felt empty. So I went into depression. you know, not to the point of suicide, but it was just like, man, what's my purpose in life here? But I remembered deep down inside, you know, what my mom told me, what my big brother told me. Just keep on keeping on, keep pushing. So I got a nighttime job. After 6 years of active duty, I got a nighttime job driving cars for Avis and Budget for like $7 an hour at night. That way, during the day, I could do interviews. And after 6 months, on my last active duty paycheck, Raytheon called me, say, hey, we want to hire you. You're one of the 6 candidates out of like 1,000 that they chose. And I was like, oh, thank God. You know, finally I got a steady paycheck. I can finally take care of my family again. And so that process was, you know, I went through a time of depression. Like, what am I doing wrong here? Because as a veteran, sometimes you expect, okay, I'm a veteran. It should be pretty easy for me to get, you know, get a civilian job. But no, it wasn't that way for me. But that struggle taught me a lot. Because, you know, if you just keep pushing, you keep pushing, you keep pushing, good things are going to happen no matter what you go through. And it'll just make you tougher for it.
Now, you know, this is what I want to talk about. I want to talk about resumes because one of my friends, Jim, he has a resume business also. And we were putting mine together to put on LinkedIn. And he explained to me, you know, like you talk about is, you know, sometimes when we, as military personnel, we're making a resume and we're putting all kinds of nomenclatures and all kinds of stuff. And it looks totally confusing to the civilian population. And a lot of times when, you know, if a civilian, you know, somebody that's hiring looks at that resume and they can't tell heads or tails. So they're just going to toss it to the side because they don't know what the hell you're talking about. Is, you know, you see that a lot with the business that you have?
Yeah. So a lot of times I have to do the research myself when they do acronyms. And then I either go back to the guy and say, hey, what does this mean? And then I have to do research so I can get the concept of it down so I can put those details in the resume. Because some resumes I see are like deployed to Iraqi Freedom and participated in this exercise. What did you do exactly in there? You know, so sometimes I have to do the research. And then the jargon part, as long as they, you know, that those abbreviations, the acronyms, how military speak, right? We always speak in acronyms. And sometimes those acronyms don't mean the same from other branches. They could have the same letters, but they could totally mean different things. So I was try to write those out or try to find out, hey, what is this exactly? And then after the resume is done, I make sure the client can speak to it, because that's the worst part when somebody else does your resume and then you can't speak to it when you go on an interview.
You know, and I could totally see that. So now, you know, we're going to talk about business now, and we're going to talk about, you know, getting jobs in the civilian sector. What do you recommend, you know, because a lot of people don't think about getting out until they're out. Do you recommend, you know, maybe 6 months, a year ahead of time, maybe they start networking, maybe they start putting feelers out, getting their resume together? What is your opinion?
I say 6 months to a year would be right timing if you absolutely know that you're getting out, because now you can start networking. If you plan to stay close to the base you're staying, your networking will help you. Go to TAPS, but you know, TAPS only teaches us so much. Talk to the guys who already got out and already have their career, their second career set. Go reach out to those guys. Ask them for tips. Hey, how did you adjust to this? How did you adjust to that? Because a lot of times when we get out, we just like, oh, we see the finish line, but we don't see what's after that that we need to do. So yeah, start on the resume, start the networking. If you want to go to school, you know, make sure all those benefits are intact. Your post 9/11 GI Bill. Depending on where you plan to get out, make sure that's the school and the type of major you want to get into. So just those things, just networking, just prepare your mindset that, you know, it's not going to be as structured anymore. You're going to have somebody's son making six digits because they own the company, and you're going to be from the bottom. Even if you were E6, E7, E8, E9, you have to start over again, and you have to swallow that pride.
Now, you know, talking about pride, now, you know, me and you are both gone through the Design Your Paycheck course, you know, with Robert Garcia. And, you know, I'm going to be 53-year-old guy. So I had to humble myself and learn the things that, you know, I don't know. You know, one of my favorite sayings is, you know, you don't know what you don't know, so hire somebody that does. Right. So talk to us a little bit about, if you don't mind, Robert Garcia, and talk to us a little bit about his course and what it's done for you and how it's helped you.
So with Robert Garcia, man, he awesome guy. I served with him, and we were in the same reserve unit together. And we talk here and there. We weren't really like hangout type buddies, but he would always tell me, like, before he's struggling with, you know, before he got all this success, like, oh man, I'm struggling, but you know, the 9-to-5 is not for me. And I would go there like, hey, just keep doing what you're doing, man, because if you quit, that's it, right? So I'd always go there, support him. And then every time I had issues with my projects and stuff, you know, with the military side, he'd always support me. Hey, that's, you know, you did a good job over there, and maybe try this and this and this next time. You know, I didn't look at his rank. I looked at his knowledge, even though I ranked in that time, because I can always learn from everybody. And with the Design Your Paycheck, man, he, just because of that, without even advertising, this ebook got me $500. That's without even social media or nothing. So his ideas worked. He has a proven concept of a business setting, no matter what it is. And he has a lot of connections too. So yeah, he's amazing.
So talk to me, you know, about writing your own book, how that came out. And because I love the book, by the way, and what kind of feedback have you received from your book?
So the book came about because, again, Robert Garcia, he said, you made Chief Master Sergeant. That's 1% of the Air Force with that personality. I'm pretty sure a lot of people would want to know how, because a lot of the chiefs we had, they were loud, or they had that stature. And here comes me, the next Chief Master Sergeant, who's in quiet, not very boisterous. And so that's how it came about. But Robert told me, but you were effective as a leader because they responded to you very, you know, you produced a lot with the way you were. Even if you weren't loud, you didn't have this commanding presence. You just knew how to take care of your guys, and which, you know, that was the main thing. And so that's how that book came about. He said, tell your story, because I think people would want to hear your story. And, you know, from your younger life to until you made Chief Master Sergeant. So that's how the book came about.
So what are you doing now? What are you currently up to right now?
So right now, I'm continuing telling my story with Vicky. She's a podcast based out of Singapore, so it's like worldwide, international podcast, and she's helping me tell my story out there. And the reason why I wanted on an international, you know, one, I'm Filipino, and I wanted to see me and be like, this guy made it that far, and he looks like that, and he's quiet, you know. So I just wanted to be an example of somebody who's quiet, but still you can lead effectively. And then the resume thing, that's you know, that's, I have references, referrals here and there, and then I'm starting to help more. Even they're not, you know, before it was veterans, now it's becoming like civilians, you know, community neighbors, helping their resumes out. And so far it's been picking up.
Okay, so now a lot of people, you know, there are certain gurus out there, I'm not going to mention any names because I'm not about to get sued. you know, they're always talking about, you know, go all in on your dream and all this. But, you know, there's people like us, you know, we got a house, got a mortgage payment, we got kids. So how do you go about, you know, because you still have a government job, correct?
Yes.
So then how do you, tell us what a day, what your day's like, you know, working a full-time job and then also starting your business. How did you go about doing both successfully?
So it's crazy because it, thing came about from work, actually. Some of these guys were having issues transferring their contractors, their defense contractors, to civil service employees, because what it is keywords on their resumes. And it got to the point where I helped a bunch of people. The supervisor were like, hey, go to Ralph so he can help you with your resume so we can transfer you over to civil service. And then my buddy got a help. He's a Marine vet. And he looked at me and he said, dude, you have a gift. You should start doing this as a business. It's low overhead. It's just you and your computer and your time. You have nothing else to invest, you know, besides that. And so that's how it came about. Then I put it in Robert Garcia's ear and he said, that's your niche. So and that's how it came about. But just balancing everything, it's just time management. just after work, you know, a couple hours here, a couple hours there. Making sure I can contact those guys at the right times because we all live in different time zones sometimes. Making sure I get the right information on there. And then I give them a certain time frame when I can get it done. That way, if they agree with the time frame, then cool. If not, then that's cool too.
So now, you know, last couple of questions. How do we find you? How can we get in touch with you? If somebody needs a resume done, how can we get in touch with you?
So right now, I just have an email and an FB page. The email is straightresumeenhancement@gmail.com. And my FB page is the same, Straight Resume Enhancement. And yeah, it is searchable.
Okay. Now, Straight Resume, right?
Yeah, Straight Resume Enhancement.
Okay. So now, last question. You know, we're still living in a crazy world. We're still living in a COVID world. Here in New Jersey, a lot of parents have lost jobs. So some of them are driving Uber, DoorDash, and just trying to pay the bills. So if there's somebody out there right now struggling to find a good job, I think that there's going to be a lot of jobs opening up once this whole unemployment thing gets straightened out. So if there's somebody out there struggling to find a better job, what's something they can do in the next 24 hours to start to get some help and maybe to get their resume looked over and actually enhanced?
So what I would suggest is go search, do a job search, find the specific one you want, because the way I do my resumes is I cater it to the job posting. It's not just a general resume. So find the job they want, look at the pay scale, can, if that's what they want for the pay scale, then cool. Come to me. I'll help you out with, you know, I do charge $225, but that's for $225 a resume, but that's with two revisions within 3 months. So say you're finding another job because you change your mind, then that's, you know, then you can bring that one revision in. That's included in that $225 charge. So that's kind of the way I'm trying to help people out, because I know some people out there do federal resumes and they charge like $400 and with nothing extra. So,
okay. So guys, if you're listening to this, definitely go to straightresumeenhancement@gmail.com. And you can also go to his Facebook page, Straight Resume Enhancement. It's full of knowledge, doing great things. Ralph, I love you, brother. I appreciate everything that you're doing, and I support you 100%. Whatever I can do, I got your back, bro.
I appreciate it, Richard.
All right, Ralph, have an amazing week and have an awesome weekend.
All right, you too, sir. God bless you.
Bye. Hey, guys, if you're enjoying our show, if you love what we're doing, if you would like to support us, we have a whole bunch of great stuff coming out. We have a brand new t-shirt line that's coming out. Hats, coffee mugs, any kind of swag that lets your friends know that you support Vertical Momentum and you're always looking to get better. Also, we have our new coffee brand coming out. It's called Vertical Momentum Coffee. It's ass-kicking coffee. And it will get you moving in the morning. So guys, if you're interested, go to www.richardkaufman.net. Check us out, leave us a note, tell us what you'd like, and we'll actually send it to you. The new website is being built. So if you guys want to, our book is out there on Amazon. It's called A Hero's Journey from Darkness to Light. Definitely check it out. It talks about my story, but it also talks about how to survive depression, how to survive addiction. All right, guys, I love you. Thank you so much for always supporting our mission, which is to save lives.
Thank you for joining us today. Please hit subscribe and share. Please feel free to leave us a comment.